Welcome to Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between, the podcast from Bespoke Family. I'm Bex.
And I'm Claire. Thanks for joining us as we tackle the ups and downs of life with children, helping you to get the best out of your time together. No rules, no judgment, just guidance. So grab a cuppa and let's get started with today's episode.
Hi and welcome to today's podcast. We are delighted to welcome Sam from SPD Tuition and Coaching and Charlotte from Speech Therapy with Charlotte. So hello guys, nice to see you again.
Hello.
Thanks so much for having us. It's great to see you guys again.
Oh, lovely to have you. So this time we're going to be talking about foundations for starting school. So the kind of premise for it is why focusing on emotional balance and your child's developing communication skills is more important than the ABCs. So I think maybe, can we just start with you guys talking a little bit about, well, why you've decided to do this kind of focus and a bit about your background and why you are the people that we need to listen to on this subject.
I love that. I think Charlotte and I come from a very similar perspective on this, which is why we kind of came together in the first place for it. I've kind of been working in this area for a while now, and Charlotte and I came together because a lot of what we both do crossed over in terms of emotional well-being, emotional understanding, emotional regulation, and of course communication and language is a huge part of the well-being of our children, but also what they can achieve. And it, you know, impacts their confidence, it impacts their resilience, it impacts all of the stuff that I work on, as well as, you know, being its own standalone thing. So that's why we've come together to look at this from a little bit of a different view, because lots of what we were seeing out in the world already was very much about being academically ready for school, you know. And I think Charlotte agrees in this, and she will tell me if she doesn't. But, you know, I always say that we don't go to a French class already speaking French. Always say this, you know, and I think that this is something that we forget, is, you know, we want our children to get to school already reading and writing and doing maths. But actually, the foundations for a lifelong learner go beyond the skills they learn in that moment. They go beyond the academic stuff. And we forget that when we are learning, we have to be learning ready, and learning readiness doesn't come from what we know, it comes from what we think we can learn. And when we're in that space of openness and in that space of, I guess, security and strong foundations for how we feel and how we feel we can do and what we're putting ourselves out in the world to achieve, then the outcomes are very different. And you know, there's a significant difference in terms of children who have a really strong emotional balanced foundation versus those who come into the education system without it.
I do agree, Sam. I agree wholeheartedly with everything. Oh, phew. And I think just in terms of my background, because I'm a speech and language therapist, and I think I initially started off doing this work with families who have children who are following a different pattern of speech and language development. And I think that the work that we do kind of supporting those kids in their preparation for school is really important. But it's intrinsically linked with kind of emotional regulation and just being able to manage your emotions, which at the time of starting school, it's a really emotional time, not only for children, but for their parents as well. And certainly I have one child who has gone through that transition, and then my daughter is due to start school this year. So kind of drawing upon that personal experience as well has really led me to believe that this work is really important. And I think when parents are worried, you know, obviously as parents we all do this, we go to Google or whatever our preferred search engine is, and we just, you know, we'll type in kind of quick things, and as Sam said, it's often coming up with things that you can do to help them with their writing and their reading and their math skills, which is really important stuff, of course. But actually, if we don't revisit those foundational skills, as Sam said, of kind of building kind of emotionally resilient kids who have strategies to support themselves, which ties hand in hand with helping them understand and navigate the world around them, which is where the kind of speech and language side comes in, then they're going to have shaky foundations. And every time they come across a different transition, which kids are doing all the time, you know, every time they have a new teacher or every time they change years, then those foundations are going to be shaky and they're not going to be able to continue to grow and learn. So we're really thinking about the advice that we give parents now will be stuff that will help their children be robust for now and in the future.
I think I always remember when my children went to school for the first time, and they were actually much younger because they're August babies. And so obviously that gives you that, you kind of already think, my goodness, they're so young. And then when you go and you go to the open evening, you know, open morning kind of thing, and you see the other parents and they're all saying, oh, my child can write their name, how about you? And I'm thinking, oh my God, I've not had time to, like, you know, let alone tell them how to take a jumper off, never mind, let, you know, they're writing their name and, you know, able to add 2 + 2. And I think there is a lot of pressure out there. And like you quite rightly say, that gives you, makes you feel pressure, but also you then put that pressure on your child to kind of go, you need to write your name by the time you go, you know, we can't, we need to practice it. We've got to, you know, have all these activities we do. But actually, the whole thing that you've been talking about, I think for me, the word foundation is a really strong one, because like you say, you don't go to French class and already know French. That's why you go. You go because they're going to be there to do it. But what you do need to do is go open to learning French and interested in what you're going to find out. And that's where, that is from what you're saying, is what we can give them. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I wanted to just say something off the back of that, Bex, because you said you went along to this like an open day and you noticed what the other kids could do that your kids couldn't do. And I just kind of want to say that that is something that most parents experience, you know, like we're all quite good at noticing, you know, like this comparison thing of like, you notice the things that your children can't do often. You know, you look at another kid and you think, wow. In fact, on a play date just the other day, one of my daughter's friends came over and her mum mentioned that at bedtime she reads a book to herself, and they're like four. And I did the whole thing like, my four-year-old doesn't read to herself. Yeah. So we all do it. But so I primarily work with children whose speech and language is not following a typical pattern of development. And with those parents that I'm working with, when they're saying, yeah, but when I was at school the other day or when I was at nursery, I noticed that all of the other kids are doing X, Y, and Z, I'll always try and say to them, can you tell me something that your child can do that you don't think other kids their age can do? And there's usually two or three things that their child can do. So I think all children are different and they all have a variety of different skills. But yeah, just to acknowledge that situation that you found yourself in is a real one for many parents. So yeah, I guess we just want to help reassure parents, but also not just reassure. We don't want to do the whole like, oh, don't worry, it will be fine, because we don't want to do this whole wait and see thing. We're really passionate about early intervention. So that basically means giving parents the skills and the confidence to feel empowered and know that what they are doing for their kids is the best thing. You're not just sitting around waiting to see how it will all pan out. You're actually kind of taking a much more proactive approach to supporting your child and building on those foundations.
And I think you can do that from that space, can't you? You know, it's interesting. And I always say to parents that it's interesting, rather than having that fear mentality or that, you know, emotion that drives, oh gosh, I need to, rather than having that, it's we get to work on these things with our children. We get to compare in a positive way, not always a place of scarcity and fear that they're not going to be able to achieve something. And I think that's such a shift. You know, I very similarly have this experience with my son as well. You know, some of his friends are knowing more of the sounds than he does, or can recognize all of the numbers, and he's, you know, still learning that. And then we go to a playground or what have you, and he's the first up the, you know, first up the climbing wall. And so it's just kind of where do you see those areas that you get to work on with your children? And when we start to shift it from have to's and need to's to get to's and want to's, it feels different, doesn't it? And I think when our children feel that, they respond in a similar way. You know, I always say to my son, you know, what do we get to do today? What do we get to look at today? And a lot of the time he just wants to do the same things, you know, play with the monster trucks. And not the numbers or the sounds that I have out all the time and, you know, have that will inside that he will pick up. But, you know, it is that, you know, using what their drivers are and what their natural curiosity leads to rather than that fear of, my goodness, we're going to be judged or not be able to achieve what everyone else is.
Do you think there's also... So I remember, just as we've been talking, I remember when I was managing a nursery and we were doing our getting all our preschoolers ready to go off to school and they were going off to do their school visits and one mum came back in floods of tears and I was like, what on earth has happened? Like, this was meant to be an enjoyable experience. And she said, they've got to write their name and we've got to send it to the school and then they put it on a cushion and that's what they sit on for the rest of the year. So when they do circle time, their name is on there. Now, the child has to write it. And she's like, but he write his name. And I was like, okay. And she said, and he's going to be stuck with whatever he writes for a whole year. And then he'll see all his friends can write their name. And and it went on. And then she's like, why did we give him a long name? We should have just given him a three-lettered name. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Now you're questioning what you've named your child. You gave your children three-lettered names.
I know, as I said it, I was like... That's why my children are Amy and Ben. Yeah, like three.
So she said, well, we had a lot of calming down. She thought she'd failed him. She also thought we'd failed him as a nursery because he should be writing his name. The school apparently was shocked that he wasn't writing his name. And I just said to her, you just need to take out this pressure and actually let him do what he wants. He doesn't have to write his name because he'll recognise the picture he's drawn and he will probably enjoy that much more than trying to find his name. And I said, and half the other children probably won't have even written their name. Their parents will have done it with their other hand and made out that their child did it. So don't worry about it. And it does. Swap it round. Don't joke. There's lots of people out there that write birthday cards with their other hand when their child refuses. So
top tip from Claire Burgess, do it with your other hand. It looks like a child's written it.
I know all the tricks.
Swap it round.
But this parent, that was their first experience of school. And she walked back into nursery with her child. Her child's looking, going, why is mummy sad? And that was their first experience of school. And I think, you know, there's such... It does depend on your school as well, doesn't it? And I think what the expectation of school is, of what they want the children coming through for, to be able to do. And I think probably having an awareness of what school expectations are, to be able to challenge it a little bit before you go to school and kind of be put on the back foot. It's kind of saying, actually, no, it's okay that they can't write their name because he can do X, Y, Z and is amazing at it.
Are there standard things that most schools will say, this is where you expect, or are schools different in their expectations?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the early learning goal is the early learning goal and that is standard in terms of what we want them to achieve at different points of the early years. So there are expectations, I guess, in terms of that. Are they... I've got to be careful with how I put this now. Are they necessarily focused on the most important things, shall we say? Possibly not. I think that whether a child can write their name versus, you know, getting themselves dressed or having, you know, the right responses to moving their body across the midline and having, you know, their eye patterns in the right place and all of the physical things in terms of that age group and that developmental stage, that's far more important than being able to write with letters you don't actually know inside out yet. When I was a literacy consultant before I went into behaviour as a specialism, and one of the things that we always would talk about is the fact that, you know, you have to know those sounds incredibly well in order to write them, because recall and you know, spelling is a very different and I guess a higher level skill, if you like, versus responding to something when it comes to reading. So actually seeing your name versus being able to write your name are very different. You've got the physicality of the writing, which is a muscular development in itself, versus the understanding of the sounds. So I think when it comes to writing names in particular, you know, that has to be considered. Lots of children don't have the muscle strength to write long names or, you know, names that are a little bit more challenging in terms of that. And it's something that, yes, needs to be achieved in those early years, but certainly not before school, you know, certainly not ahead of learning all of their sounds and recognizing all of their sounds and then being able to say all of their sounds. You know, these things come first. They kind of trump writing sounds that mean nothing to them.
I have more to add, if that's okay. As someone who kind of specializes in working with children who have maybe additional needs or different needs, and also as a parent, there's two things I want to raise. One is that I am a pretty confident person and advocate for my kids, but certainly for me going to see the doctor, I feel like all of my skills go. I have to take a notepad and pen with my notes on, or write notes on my phone, because when I go to that situation I feel like I don't know what to say. And I don't feel like this within the school setting, because I have lots of experience of working in schools, but I have so many friends who tell me that they are nervous about chatting to teachers and people within the school system. I guess it's our experience of being kids within a school. You know, like, we don't challenge the teachers. It's not something that comes naturally to everyone. So that's one thing I'd say is, unfortunately, as parents, you are your child's biggest advocate. You're also the person who probably knows your child the best. So if you want to raise something, you need to find a way, a workaround, whether it's writing notes on your phone or whatever. You need to find a way that you're going to be bringing things up. The other thing I would say is that, as we've just talked about here, there are these kind of early learning goals, ideas of like what the majority of the population are doing at different ages and stages of development. But they're just there as a guideline. And one of the reasons they're there as a guideline is so that we can notice as educators, as adults, when children aren't following that typical pattern of development, so that we can work out how to best support them. That is the actual reason that they're there. So if your school is saying something to you that your child should, using that word in like commas, because who should be able to do anything, right? If the school is saying your child should be able to do this, rather than as a parent freak out and say, but my child can't, have a chat with your child's school and say, okay, well, my child isn't at that stage yet. What is it that we can do together to help move my child forward and help my child to progress? So there's two things that I would have said to that parent in that situation that Claire mentioned before. One would have been just, you know, like Claire did, obviously reassuring. But the other things, don't be afraid to challenge things and ask why kids have to do that, because I think sometimes we misunderstand as parents because of, you know, we have these preconceived ideas. Oh my gosh, they're saying that my child has to be able to write. But actually, it is possible that the school are just like, oh no, it'd be really lovely for them, wouldn't it? That they have their own personalized cushion that makes them feel safe and secure. And it may be absolutely fine, as Claire suggested, that they just draw a picture on that cushion. Like that you may have misunderstood the reason why. So if you're wondering, please do discuss it with the school. And then, yeah, the other thing is, if ever they're not meeting these early learning goals, they won't be the only child. And there probably are some other goals that they have met or exceeded. You know, it's just about kind of keeping that conversation open. And certainly when your child starts school, you're going to know much more than the teachers who are new to them. So you're the person who does kind of need to be aware and raise that sort of thing.
What happens? How do parents who have had a horrendous experience of school themselves, what can they do? What kind of things can they do before their little one goes to school to try and help them? Because like, sometimes even the word school can put shivers down people's spine, and they can remember things that they just, you know, they don't want to go in, they don't like the smell, they don't, you know, we talked about, you know, feeling quite overwhelmed by everything. How do you support, like, what would you say to a parent who is in that situation and incredibly kind of dysregulated, probably because of the thought of school.
I think knowing that is so important. You know, the first step to any, you know, transformation or behaviour change is knowing where you're at, you know, having that awareness. And I think if you know that you didn't have a great school experience, I mean, I went into education and I had a terrible school experience, both primary and secondary. So, you know, that was a huge shift for me going into to become an educator myself. And I think that when you know that you have got these triggers, you have got past, you know, past traumas, whether they're big or small, you know that there will be things that crop up that are going to make you feel uncomfortable. And, you know, when we collaboratively, Charlotte and I work with people or separately, I often get people to write those down. So, you know, this could be a tool for you to take away right now listening to this, is if you've had a situation or a few at school where you have felt uncomfortable, you have felt distressed, or you know that that is something that you're not wanting to pass on, because remember, emotions are contagious. So if we feel it, we can pass that on very, very easily to our children, not only through the words we use around that, you know, that place or that setting, but also around our body language and our, you know, movements around it. So get everything down and you know, make sure that you know what it was that made you feel uncomfortable, the real nitty gritty, and kind of clear the cobwebs of your own mind, if you like, so that there is space for new understanding and new experiences within that setting for you now in your new role as a parent. Because I think sometimes we forget that our identities shift hugely as we grow and develop and, you know, change chapters in our lives. And we can hold on to those past experiences without realizing that our identity has changed, and we can kind of bring it back in, and it doesn't quite fit into our new, you know, our new us as we've grown. But we're trying to kind of find a gap to pop it in there, you know, and hold on tight to it. But if we can get everything out and we can look at it judgment-free, you know, just notice what's going to come up, you can then, I guess, be really conscious of what phrases you use and how you frame things for your developing human, your little one, you know, so that they don't then, I guess, reshare or kind of re-experience the things that you have through secondhand knowledge and understanding.
I was just gonna add on to what Sam said about this idea of regulation. It's kind of a buzzword, and particularly the terminology of self-regulation, which actually doesn't really occur in children until when they're kind of much older, more like top end of primary school. But in these early years, what we can be focusing on is supporting regulation through co-regulation. So we're just really thinking about the children being kind of balanced and ready for learning. And one of the key things that we need to do is, as Sam mentioned there, our emotions are contagious. So if we're trying to regulate a child, we also need to be presenting as calm and regulated as well. And so if you are feeling anxious about school, you know, maybe you've got some negative experiences of school yourself, then it's just so important, as Sam mentioned, to understand and deal with that in whatever way. It may be that writing these things down isn't enough. Actually, maybe you need to, you know, receive some support yourself, some professional support to work through that. If in the heat of the moment you're feeling like you're quite overwhelmed by something, but you think that you could calm yourself down by doing some breath work or relaxation, whatever it is to calm yourself, then that's great too. Go take a moment and then come back to your child. So you kind of need to be this base for them, this safe base and this point of calm, so that you can kind of support them emotionally as well.
And is that what you mean by having emotional balance as a foundation?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it really is, you know, as you said, it's not enough to have perceived calm, because our children and us, you know, when it comes to co-regulation, what we're really talking about is our nervous system and their nervous system. You know, I think it's, you know, something around 7% of communication being words, Charlotte, is that right? But, you know, if we think about that, it's not enough just to try and show the calm on the outside in the external world. We have to really find a way to create it and generate it on the internal world. And when we are able to do that, as Charlotte said, co-regulation is a lot easier. when we're trying to fake it till we make it, if you like, it really does come across to our children because they know something's up. And in those instances, I would say have that conversation and be open about it. And you can say, oh, you know, mummy or daddy or whoever you are to that child, I had a bit of a tough time at school. You know, school has changed a lot since I went to school. Gosh, I used to do this and now they do this, this and this. So sometimes I might not feel great about school, but you might feel really great about school, and that's okay. And having those conversations, because there will be times where your child feels fantastic about school, but there's also going to be times where your child thinks it's the worst place ever. and that's okay. So having those conversations allows them to have that freedom of emotion around that topic, have that understanding that sometimes it's going to be feel great, sometimes it's going to feel miserable, sometimes you're going to have loads of friends and other times you're going to feel like you've got none. And that's kind of the journey that life gives us. But if we have those conversations with them, then they are more open to experiencing it all rather than thinking, gosh, something doesn't feel right, but it should. And there's those air quotes around the should again. We always say, don't should yourself, don't we, Charlotte?
We don't like to think about what we should be doing. We prefer to think about what we could be doing.
Absolutely.
Nice. So why do you see this kind of emotional balance side of things being so important at this transition?
Okay, so I could talk about this stuff for hours and hours, so I will try and hold it back because I know we're on a time frame. But emotional balance really is being ready for everything, isn't it? So if we think about finding where we are most comfortable, finding where we practice our emotions, they're creating the blueprint in those early years, and particularly thinking about those early years, and that is really 0 to 7 or 0 to 5. They are the creation of our blueprint emotionally. And I talk a lot around what we call the emotional home and what we practice being where we make progress. So if we are constantly practicing feeling angry, the chances are that that's going to become part of who we think we are, you know, part of who we connect identity to. And what we look at as small things that sometimes as adults we don't necessarily connect to, you know, the other things in life, those show up. So I had a conversation, I was doing some children's coaching in school last week, and the little boy that I was working with said, without even, you know, this being part of a conversation, he said, I'm just such an angry person. And this child is, gosh, how old is he? So he is year 4, but he already has that as part of who he is. And when we're looking at emotional balance, when we're looking at regulating how we feel, it's really about allowing children to have the whole spectrum of emotions, because we're meant to, but not hold on to any of them as part of an identity, as part of who they are and what they can or cannot achieve indirectly because of that. So when we're looking at building emotional regulation into day-to-day practice or building into identity, what we really want our children to be able to say is, yes, I feel happy, sad, excited, miserable, angry, frustrated, all of these things, but they have nothing to do with who I am. I am brave, courageous. I am human. I am excitable at times, you know, whatever those look like. But ultimately, they have to have a range of it. They have to have a balance of it, because what children do is they take what we say and they take what they think and they feel. And as their brain is developing, they start to decide that that's who I am. You know, they have that kind of personification of emotion. And that's very, very linked to who they then think that they are in the world, because they're trying to figure all that out.
So this is the kind of thing that we're talking about being something that is important for a child before they go to school, to have this kind of emotional balance. But how can you, I mean, I know that some families, it's just part of everyday life and they talk to children about emotions. But if you're somebody sitting here listening, thinking, oh my goodness, I really don't know if, I don't know if my child knows is emotionally balanced, like, what would you say to them? How do they do it?
Something that we usually recommend that parents start off with is not being afraid to model their own emotions. And I think you guys have spoken about this quite a lot, actually. I'm sure I've listened to one of your podcast episodes where you've covered this. Just making sure that you start off by kind of telling them how you're feeling and showing them that you are also human and you experience a range of different emotions. But that doesn't make you an angry person or a sad person or whatever. You know, you feel sad in the moment, and at this age group, really, we're thinking about kind of introducing them to that concept of different words associated with different emotions, and also that you feel them. You can try and maybe label the emotions as they experience them, but we always put that one out with a word of caution, because sometimes it's difficult to know exactly how somebody else feels. So if you're saying to them, you look sad, they might actually be angry or something slightly different. So, you know, you can use that one, it can be quite powerful. But maybe you could say something like, oh, I'm wondering if you might be sad, so that you're kind of like putting the caveat there. And then just exposing them to emotions again through looking at pictures together. There's lots of great children's stories out there. So really, like, this is a great starting point, is thinking about emotional vocabulary and modelling that kind of emotional balance within yourself.
Absolutely. And I was going to say exactly the same thing there, Charlotte. It was so aligned. You know, it does start with us as an adult and what we are experiencing on a day-to-day and what we're sharing with them. I think sometimes we hide it from them,
but it's quite a shift, isn't it? Like, if you think about us as children with our parents and maybe our parents with their parents, and we were talking about this real want for our children to just always be happy, and we just want them to be happy. So we want them to be happy to go to school, and we want them happy to do this and happy to do that, and you're there going, but they can't be happy all the time, because actually that's not, unfortunately, you know, that's not life. But also, they won't know what happy feels like if they don't feel sadness. They won't know what, because actually that's what makes us nice, rounded people, when we feel all these different emotions. And I think there's this, particularly in this lead up to school, it's like, oh, you're going to be a big boy, big girl, you know, you're going off to big school, you're going to have such a great time and all these things. And you're there going, it might be a little bit tricky, you might not love it, you know, that's okay. And I think it's that we've only recently been doing a thing on social media with regards to showing our emotions with children, and it's quite interesting how quite a lot of adults don't feel that they should, because they don't want their children to think that they might be anything other than happy or sometimes a little frustrated. I think we can get as far as a little frustrated and then everyone goes, don't really want them to know that we're cross.
That's enough now.
and we pull it back in, and it's like, actually, how do they learn? And I think it's that whole thing of, if you don't see someone else doing it, you don't feel you can do it. And it's interesting. I had a conversation even with an adult about going, you know, something that was going on, and she said to me, she's like, but I don't want to cry. I don't like people seeing me cry. And I was like, but that's how you're feeling. That's you getting it out, and that's okay. And it's like, no, I can't cry in front of people. And I'm like, gosh, it's such an interesting thing that's in us. And it's amazing that we're working with our children now to go, do you know what? It's okay. You can, you know, you can feel all these things. They don't define you. They're just what they are. But I don't think we've ever had so much emotional language as what we've got coming through now. I think it's a very different, and I think for some parents, it's very hard to start talking in a very emotional way.
Absolutely is. It absolutely is. Do you know, I was working with a family, so I do parental strategy sessions as part of the balance system. And I was working with a family a while ago, and one of the things that their child was really struggling with at school was peer, you know, conflict resolution. And having an argument, he would become very dysregulated. And then from there, he didn't know where to go with it. And having done some work with the child and then working with the parents as well, we started to get that picture that his parents didn't argue at all. They would, of course, you know, get the hump with each other every now and again, but there was never any arguments. So he'd never had a model of what to do after an argument, because there wasn't one. He wasn't seeing that at all. And what we actually started to do was look at what they disagreed on as parents, and, you know, in the day-to-day life, and almost mock up some, I would say, some fake, you know, arguments that weren't huge or, you know, terrifying for the child to watch, but just so they could then work it down and bring it back for him, so he could have that model of what do you do when your ideas clash and you might get a bit frustrated with each other, have an argument a little bit, and then how do you track that back with it being useful and with it being safe and feeling safe. I don't mean physically safe, I mean emotionally safe here. How does that look? Because he wasn't having any of that model to him. So when he was going to school and having these huge arguments with his friends, he just didn't know how to cope with it afterwards. He didn't know how to build some what I refer to as peace pathways afterwards, because he just didn't have that modelling around him. And of course, then he was being told off by the staff rather than coached through. So he just didn't know what to do next. And I think sometimes it's really important that as adults, we recognise that what they see and what they hear and what they are surrounded by is what they're learning from constantly. And if we are hiding away our feelings that don't feel good, then they're not sure what to do with theirs, and they don't feel like that's part of what I refer to as natural human experience stuff. So in terms of having arguments, or in terms of having huge dysregulation and meltdowns, aka, you know, tantrums, or whatever adults want to call it, when they have those, they need to know how to track it back to feel safe again internally. And if we don't do that as grown-ups, and if we don't put language to it, and we don't associate it with certain things for them and tell them that that feels big for you, maybe. Does that feel big for you? Because it looks like it feels big for you. Sometimes when I feel like that, it feels big for me. You know, giving them those understandings allows them to think, right, okay, what am I experiencing? What feeling is it? How big does it feel? Is it manageable? Do I need to find someone to help me? And have those questions at hand so that they can then work with it and through it, rather than not really knowing and not wanting to share it because they don't feel that it's shareable.
And presumably this is why the speech and language is so important then, moving kind of onto that side of things, because without speech and language, you can't communicate with anybody to kind of tell them, I'm feeling like this, or I need to resolve this with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all really linked, and it's kind of like, you know, like a cycle, because it may be that you don't have the words to express that sort of thing. But also, if you have speech and language needs, then often that causes you to experience different emotions, like feeling frustrated because you're not understanding or able to express yourself. So we really want to keep speech and language at the forefront of people's minds also when we're thinking about school transition. I think even if you're not concerned necessarily, even if your child's speech and language is following quite a typical pattern of development, these kids are starting school when they're four. You know, some of these kids have literally just turned four, so they're really little. Even the ones who are nearly five, they're still really little, and so their speech and language is still very much developing at this stage. And what we know about development is that when we're going through a time of change, possible stress, and that stress might not look like, you know, feeling worried. That stress actually could almost be like excitement. You know, we're going through this period of like heightened emotions and change. Actually, even if the speech and language skills are usually pretty good at this time, they might take a bit of a backseat, understandably, because there's so much change going on. So we might need to go above and beyond to support children's speech and language development at this point. And I think a couple of the key things that we need to be thinking about is whether or not they need any support to with their kind of navigating of this new social situation. This all comes under communication, speech and language development. What support do they need to kind of establish relationships with the other peers and the new adults in their setting, and just the new places within the environment, that sort of thing, all affects how we communicate and interact. we also need to think very much about how we support children to understand what will happen. I think, Claire, you mentioned before this terminology of big school. And this is something that we talk about a lot all the time, because I remember when my son was going to start school, it became apparent to me about half a year before he went to school that he thought big school was one really big school and that everyone goes to big school because his cousins go to big school, his friends that he knew used to go to nursery with, they went to big school, you know, all of these. And he just thought big school was this one big school. And we had to explain that actually big school isn't one generic place. So really being specific about the language that we're using, but also in that run up to starting school where we're talking about things like what the school uniform will be, what days they may or may not go to school, what the new routine will be, as much as possible we could be using visuals, things like photographs or real objects, to explain to them what that change is really like going to look like in a concrete way, rather than using abstract language like big school. So thinking about their social skills, thinking about their understanding, and also thinking about how they're going to express themselves about things that are happening at school. There's certain things that we need to put in place, one, to be able to help them to advocate for themselves at school, be able to do things like ask for help if they need it, feel confident asking for help, feel confident to use their language to maybe ask another child if they want to play with them, but also thinking about how they can communicate with us when they're back at home about what's been happening during their school day. And when I'm talking there about, you know, how they're going to speak, how they're going to use their language, I mean how they're going to communicate in whatever way is appropriate to them. So that may be words and spoken language, but for some children it may be a combination of using words, gestures, pictures, maybe even an alternative communication device, but making sure that we have set the children up with the skills that they need to be able to communicate both within school and also outside of school as well.
And I think the more they can do that, the more confident they feel in that situation. And I think especially when it comes to learning how to navigate friendships and what that looks like in a school setting, sometimes other children don't want to play with you, you know, and knowing that that's okay and knowing what to say in that instant. So I see it with my toddler who starts preschool at a school in September. Already when we go out and about, and he says he'll come back and he'll say that friend won't play with me or doesn't want to play this game. And I'll say something along the lines of, that's okay, that's not the friend for you right this moment, go back to him later or whatever it is. Because actually having that communication, having that language sets the door open. But once it starts to get a bit of pushback from another child, or once your child starts to hear an alternative view or an alternative opinion to the one that they want, it can be really tough. And what we can do then is start to look at how they manage that in that moment. So again, going back to the communication being very much linked to balancing emotion and shifting behavior patterns and things, they're so intertwined, because what we communicate out into the world and internally shifts how we respond to things. And of course, starting school is a whole new place, a whole new way of doing that. So not only do they get to practice that, we get to support them in that journey as adults and parents in the meantime.
I think it's also, as a parent, you're having to change and shift, because you're going to be in the playground with all those different parents and you potentially have to make those new connections. And there's these suggestions of play dates, and there's the parent who works from home, or, you know, the parent who has to go to work. And do you miss those things? Do you see those things? And I think we talk about our children making those friendships and those relationships, but actually it's us as well. And those playground moments can be really awkward for some people and quite overwhelming in just striking up a conversation. And sometimes typically you have the child who makes friends with everyone, if you're the person that's a bit like, and you've got every parent coming going, should we do a play date? Let's go out, let's do this. It's like, okay. But I think it is understanding from yourself as well that all those relationships, we always want our children to have lots of friends, be happy, and it all to be, you know, fine. And then they come home and say, such and such won't play with me. And it's like, oh, it it is hard to hear. But what you don't hear is how many times your child said to someone else, I'm not playing with you today. They don't tell you that bit. They always just tell you the other bit. And I think all of those things to navigate are huge, aren't they, for parents and for children?
Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot.
So we know that you have put together a webinar where you guys have got a toolkit for parents that, you know, give them loads more information about preparing their children in the ways that we've kind of touched on. We've gone and around the houses and talked about all sorts of different things, but can one of you just talk a little bit about that and what it is and what it means for parents?
Yeah, so we have a free webinar that's coming up. It's going to be at 8:30 p.m. on Wednesday, the 12th of July. And it's all about the foundations for starting school and why we think emotional balance and supporting communicational skills is more important than the ABCs. So what we're doing is we're hosting it online and we're inviting parents to come along so that rather than kind of you're feeling frustrated, perhaps a bit worried, I think somebody actually used the word overwhelmed, anxious to me the other day. Rather than kind of wondering what you could be doing, we're going to give you some really simple tools to use and give you some idea as to like when you might want to get these tools out of your toolkit. Like either at time points, this is the sort of thing you might want to do a month before they start school, a week before they start school. But also if you encounter this, this might be a great tool to use then. Just so that you've got a few things up your sleeve and you don't need to be wondering what you should be doing. You can think about what you could do.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's good that.
Absolutely.
So if people are, because obviously this podcast is going out and it's not just going to be here till the 12th of July. So if you're listening to it after the 12th of July, 2023, just to make it, because it's going to be there hopefully for a long time, people should just come along to your social media. Do you want to just quickly say where you are on social media and websites and things like that? And we'll put it all in the show notes too.
Absolutely. And even if you, just to kind of add there, even if you are listening to this and the time has passed, there will be a recording. So okay. We welcome you anyway. So you can come and you can sign up. There will be a recording. You can get in touch with us. We can share that with you, as well as the downloadable modules that we also will be sharing. So if you are listening to this past that date mm-hmm. and you're thinking, no, I missed it, don't worry, because it will be recorded and you can still have access to that, as well as the downloadables that we have created too.
So you're at SPD Tuition and Coaching, is that right, Sam?
I am indeed, yes.
And you're at Speech Therapy with Charlotte, is that right?
That's
Charlotte,
right.
Yeah, so if people want to get a copy of that recording, then they can come to either of those places and have a look, or equally sign up if we're listening to it before the 12th. Yeah?
Yes.
Perfect.
Super. So, well, thanks ever so much for that. I think, you know, lots of people are going to feel reassured and kind of just a little bit more comfortable that they don't have to go knowing their alphabet and count to 100 and write everything down before they get to school.
You don't need to know their Pythagoras theorem.
No, thank goodness
lucky.
For that.
Yeah. Also, we didn't mention, but for those of you who are listening, we are going to throw in a bit of a bonus, aren't we, Charlotte, for the bespoke listeners. So if you are listening to this and you want to hear more and sign up for the webinar or the downloadables, please do sign up through the bespoke link that we will share, because you will get a special bonus. Ooh. Tool coming your way.
Oh, that's exciting.
I think we might have to sign up, Bex.
Yeah.
You guys are more than welcome, always.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Well, thanks ever so much.
Thank you.
So interesting and really useful as well.
Lovely to have both of you at the same time.
Thanks so much for having us, guys. Great to talk to you again.
That's everything for today. Thanks for listening. If there's something you'd like us to talk about, we'd love you to get in touch and let us know. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Bespoke Family, or head to our website. The links are in our show notes.
Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next episode, and please give us a rating or review if you like what you hear. We're Bex and Claire, and we'll be back soon with another episode of Newborn to Teen and everything in between. See you then.